excuse. So what did we do? We stayed in the exact location. We went and went up against them.
Hey, everybody. This is Norm Farrar, a.k.a. The Beard Guy here. Welcome to another Lunch with Norm, the e-commerce and Amazon FBA podcast. Today, we're discussing Behind the Beard, the story of The Beard Guy. How did The Beard Guy come to be? How did our guest get his start in Amazon? And what were some of his biggest mistakes? Welcome to another Lunch with Norm, e-commerce and Amazon FBA podcast. All right. Today, we're discussing Behind the Beard, the story of The Beard Guy. Our guest is an Amazon e-commerce and online marketing expert with 30 years of experience. He's an international public speaker and an avid podcaster. He's a passionate mentor who coaches those with any level experience. Please welcome Norm Farrar. But first, here's a quick word from our sponsor.
Facing cash flow challenges with your e-commerce business? Discover Viably, your ultimate financial ally. From real-time sales data integrations to immediate funding access, Viably is here to support you. Plan your growth with their free tool for online sellers and engage with specialists whenever you need. Extend your cash flow with Viably.
Sit back, relax, and grab a cup of coffee so you can enjoy the show.
Hey.
Hey, Norm. How you doing?
Good. How are you, Norm?
Good. Hopefully you had a happy holiday weekend.
I had a great holiday weekend. So what about you? How was the Easter Bunny?
It was a little bit, the weather was a little bit not cooperating, so we had to stay in. But we looked for those eggs between the kitchen cabinets, and it was great.
Oh, very good.
Yes. All right. So for those who don't know you, I think this is your first time joining us on the show, Norm?
It is. It's my first time.
All right. Good. Kelsey was telling me that you've been here before, but I didn't remember at all.
I have that problem too.
Yeah, it's what happens as we get into our older age.
Yeah, so, I hid my own Easter eggs, by the way.
Oh boy, was anybody able to find them?
I couldn't. I forgot where I put them.
Oh gosh, a likely story. So, tell us a little bit about you. What's the story? What's behind the beard? How did you come to be? Where did you start? Start out of whichever beginning you want to start with.
Okay. So I do get asked, you know, was this in my blood? And I say, yes. My dad was a very successful entrepreneur, businessman. I swear at some point he had probably 20 businesses that he was managing at one point, and some were fairly large. So I think I got it from him. My first business, my first incorporated company was when I was in grade 11 or 12 with four guys. We created this rock promotion company called Relic Promotions and did pretty much nothing.
Was it music or was it like stones that you'd find outside?
No, it was music. It was music.
Just got to be sure. I'm not sure what goes on up in Canada over there.
And in fact, we almost got to promote Loverboy on their first tour across Canada. We didn't get it, but we were asked to do it if we could do it. And that's when they came out with the Weekend album. Everybody's the Weekend. I forget what the song
was. Oh, you missed out on that one, huh?
Yeah. But it came close. And then in college, started with another production company called Excel Promotions. And this is where kind of half paid my tuition or my expenses by going out and doing it. We got a couple government contracts for Children's Aid Society here in Canada and just did a variety of different smaller projects. And then graduated from film school. Oh, no, I didn't. I dropped out of film school my last semester. So just, that's how smart I am. Last semester, dropped out, but I was offered a really great job as a production assistant in the film industry. And it was a very small company called Petro Films. But we did all sorts of training films for General Motors and just a variety. Oh, by the way, here's a little story for this is how times have changed. We were shooting, so we did tons of General Motors training films. However, just so you know, most of those films had a bigger budget than most films back in Canada at that time, which was crazy. And then we transfer them over to Laserdisc, and the dealerships would watch them. But I got kicked off set once at Mercedes-Benz because in a hot studio, we were not dressed in suits, and I had shorts and a T-shirt. They kicked
you couldn't set. You couldn't pull off the Canadian tuxedo excuse?
No, I couldn't do that. I couldn't.
They weren't falling for that?
No, not at all.
But, gosh.
You know, so I didn't graduate. I decided that I was going to go and do my own thing. I worked for somebody for not even a month, and I said I couldn't do that. I was in the military, in the reserves here in Canada, and that was interesting. Met a lot of close friends. Then after that, I think I've been on my own ever since. There might have been a short period of time when I was in a company, then we were transferring to a different company, but we didn't own that company, but we, this is so crazy. Get this. So we were in the premium incentive business. We sold tchotchkes, okay? Cups, pencils, pens, whatever it is. But the company, we were doing all the sales. So we were the major salespeople, me and my buddy Dave Reeves. And we decided that we were going to go and incorporate ourselves because we were putting in so much sales, we were going to share each other's commissions. He had a good month. I had a good month. We had our separate office beside the company. And then we were putting in a ton of sales, but the company hated this. And one day we were coming back after the ladies in the company said that we could go and do this embroidery of these 5 jackets. They didn't want it because it was just too small of an order. So we came back and here's these guys in our office. And the one guy goes, the gig's up. I said, what is he talking about? He said that he found 5 jackets in our office. He was tipped off and we got fired. And it was like, hold it a second.
And they were just looking for an excuse.
Yeah, they were looking for an excuse. So what did we do? We stayed in the exact location. We went and went up against them.
Oh boy.
And we just like we were the main sales arm. We were bringing in millions of dollars for them in business, and they decided to come up with an excuse. And okay, that's fine.
That sort of teaches an important lesson. You know, sales comes before everything. You can figure out all the other stuff, but sales is number one.
Oh yeah, absolutely. And you know, it's funny because I always tell people that if there's a problem, let me know. Like, let me know if you don't like something I say, because, you know, with Kevin and I, I've talked to Kevin about this. I said, we're good friends. We're in business together. But look, if I'm getting on your nerves, it's like having a girlfriend move in with you. You know, you don't know what they're like until they move in with you. They may not like the way you squeeze the toothpaste, maybe leaving the dishes too long. But like for Kevin and I, it's like, hey, if I'm doing something to piss you off or aggravate you in some way, let me know right away, because this just builds resentment. And that's what happened with this company. They were resentful that they were paying us all this money. And by the way, they went after our clients. And guess what happened? Our clients just said, who are you? You know, because we gave excellent customer service. If they said, you know, we needed something on a Saturday, we worked Friday night to get it over to them. And, you know, they loved us and they paid extra dollars for that, which, you know, I like talking about perceived value. We were getting, you know, 100% more in gross margin than the average company in North America for that business.
Wow, that's amazing. So this is definitely quite a story to start off our time together. But as I'm listening, I thought of a couple of things, and I'm wondering if you could fill in that picture a little bit. So they both have to do with how you were growing up and mm-hmm. with your father and the influence he had on you. So the first thing I would ask is, how much did you learn about running a bunch of businesses? Was he the kind of dad who kept work at the office and nobody was allowed to talk about work on the dinner table? Or was he the kind of person that let everybody know what his day was like and brought you to the office on bring your norm to the office day? Like, what was it like at home growing up with him, learning about the business side? And the other thing I sort of would want to know.
Yeah,
is,
I mean, that's an interesting question. Earlier on, he was never seen. So this was a guy that would, like, we did a lot of things together. He was a sales guy. He made a ton of money. And, he was heavily into hockey. He was the GM of Kitchener Rangers. But once that changed, and he got into business, life kind of changed. Like, he was at work day and night. He'd come in at 2, he'd leave at 7, and this went on for years. So, and then what ended up happening while this was going on, and he got his business up and going, he ended up taking a position or buying into this company in Quebec that he used to work for, his competition. And that was a huge company. I think at the time they had 1,200 employees. And that's when everything kind of went wild. He bought a ton of different companies, almost like he taught me, I think, about that. And that's vertical integration. So he was in fiberboard. He was into shoe components. So shoe components being, you know, the back part, the counters. Then he bought a box toe company. Then he bought a heel company. And he bought more and more and more of these types of a dye company. I did learn about that. If people talk to me, what do we do with our company that Dave Reeves and I owned? Well, we were vertically integrated. We bought the screen company, the embroidery company, the courier company, and the fulfillment company. So kind of following suit. And did he bring home work? No, I can't remember at all. And it was tough because he had so many things going on. There were times that I know he couldn't make payroll. Things happen, recessions happen. And he got hit hard. So it was interesting to see what would happen in his emotional state. He was always rock solid, but man, he was sick at times just trying to make payroll. And, you know, he'd put up his own money and, you know, the banks would start to pull away. You know, when times are good, the banks are there when you don't need the money. But when you do need the money, the banks kind of go away. But I started work with him. I think I was 11 or 12. And I'd ride my bike a couple miles away to go to his first factory. And I got paid 10 cents an hour and all the pop I could drink. So, wow. And then from there, I worked with him on holidays. And
Is that what you pay Kelsey?
Yeah, it's actually, it's a little bit cheaper. But when we moved to Montreal, this is when he got into that other company. When there was holidays, I was expected to work, and I got okay pay. You know, it was just above minimum wage at the time, but was making more than a lot of my friends. It was interesting because in Montreal, it was in Chambly, a town just on the South Shore, and we got along great. Now, I don't know if it was because it was the boss's son or just because these were really great people. But the deal was I had to try to speak French, which my French really sucks. And they had to try to speak English, and their English really sucked. So we did have a lot of laughs over that. But right up until I graduated, I worked with my dad.
Wow, that's amazing. That's amazing, and that's great. So you got to see a lot of things, you know. You got to see a lot of things firsthand, which a lot of kids definitely don't. As you started your first business, as you started the rock promotion company,
yeah,
did he have guidance for you, or did he sit back and watch you make mistakes for yourself or something in the middle?
I think he helped out. Like, we got to use his lawyer, his accountant, and there wasn't much money that was made. We were kids, and sure, we decided that, I shouldn't even say this, but back then, we'd rather drink and be part of the party than go out and try to promote a party.
I don't think that's changed between then and now. That's very much the being part of the fun parts are very much a driver for being in the entertainment industry.
Oh yeah, especially when you're in your teens. But I didn't say that, you know. Oh, in Canada, by the way, it's 18. We were still a little underage, but it was fun.
Nice. I love that. So all of this stuff has to do with the regular world, the things that we see in front of us. Of course, the Lunch with Norm show is about Amazon. It's about e-commerce. And we know you have a bit of history there also. Can you tell us how you got your start in e-commerce, how you shifted from one to the other, or how you added it in as part of what you did?
Yeah, it's a bit of a story. I'll try to keep it short, but based on the company I was talking about earlier that my buddy and I started, I was working with a Fortune 500 company, and they were all over. They had like 20 offices all over North America, and I was in San Jose. And when I walked in, I saw like all the purchasing department really ticked off, like they weren't themselves. And so I went up and I was asking, you know, what was going on. And I was told that a lot of non-contracted suppliers were really pissed because they were directed to pay them around 240 days. Now, being a Fortune 500 company, a lot of these contractors thought they would get paid right away. And they were pissed, and they'd be calling and calling and calling. So I went to lunch. It just so happened that the VP of purchasing, who was from Calgary, was in San Jose at the same time. And I said, wow, it looks like you got a real problem. He goes, yeah, we do. You know, it's these expectations, and there's nothing we can do if we tell them 240 days or if we pay them 240 days, you know, I'd be mad too, but we can't. We have to take care of our contracted suppliers first. And I was. So we were pretty much ready to go, and I said, I got an idea. All right. How about I become your non-contractor purchasing department? And he goes, what are you talking about? I said, I'll take on all of the headaches. You pay me 5% and you give me my money in 30 days and I'll pay these guys in 90 days. Would that be okay? Well, 2 weeks later, I was a global non-purchasing department. I ran it out of a small business, like out of a small area. And my wife was the person that was taking care of all that. And we're not talking a little bit of money. We're talking going home one day and this company said, hey, we need $250,000 for the Masters, like for tickets and for whatever it was, the booth. I had to call my bank manager. And this is the relation. You wouldn't do this nowadays. I'd say, look, I need some bridge financing. I have to buy $250,000 worth of, and this is a real example, $250,000 of tickets for the Masters. Can you float me? Yeah, no problem. And they'd float me it. I'd have it. I'd go and buy it. And then when we got paid, and that was, by the way, it was immediate. It was over the phone, just finance, finance, finance. And that was the thing that we had going with this company. So one day I went into the office, their office, for something else. And one of the ladies said, you know what the internet is? And I said, yeah. This is at the very beginning. And she goes, well, we want to co-brand our logo on mugs and pens and keychains so the dealer could just go in, log in, and do this. Can you do that? Oh, yeah. Yeah, we can do it. I had no idea. So no idea, but we could do it. And then I called one of the contractors in India, and I said, can you help us out with this? And by the way, back in that day, it was very expensive. Trying to do what we were going to do was very expensive. And so I had this Indian agency that started the development of this. And then when it launched, other Fortune 500 companies saw it and nobody else was really doing it. And it was like, all right, we'll take care of you.
Oh, that's amazing. So did you have to finance yourself with the 240 days payment terms?
Well, see, there's no 240 anymore. It was 90. So they paid me in 30 plus 5%. So I had it sitting in my bank for 90 days or 60 days. So I'm making interest on it because I'm taking the money out and putting it in place, trying to get investments, right? And then I'd pay them. And so they were very happy. So everybody like we were involved with was very happy. And we also, something that's really important when you're in business is manage expectations. So if they thought that a smaller company might be going in and doing something, we were right up front with them. You know, it's a 90-day contract, not 91. You'll get paid 90 days. And then they were happy with that.
So that's obviously that's not an Amazon business that we're talking about.
No, but that
how would you call that like e-commerce, or how would you say it led to e-commerce?
Because after that, I started a division of the company called Creative Sparks, and we ended up doing corporate identity for companies around the world, mostly the U.S. So that Indian contact that I had was also a logo design company. And what we created was this website that it was a print-on-demand company, one of the very first in the world ever. And you could go get your logo designed, then you can get your letterhead and your envelopes, stationery, and it was all based on a time period. So that's how e-commerce got started. Right. And then we just went from one e-commerce project to another. I ended up, you remember back in the day, Abe, when you could, companies would have you rent a page. So like we would do search engine optimization for charter fishermen. And then we would go to Florida and we would just, you know, get somebody who's the number one charter fisherman or wanted to be on page one, they would pay. Same thing with dental. So we did it with a national dental chain, you know. And so that really got us going, understanding SEO, then social media, web design. And that just led to tons of e-commerce sites.
Nice. And I guess the best part of that is that you didn't have to manufacture very much, at least for that part of your empire. So that's a business in which you're just dealing with computers, you're just dealing with ranking, and then you're selling the results of what you're able to accomplish, I guess, right?
Yeah, but strangely enough, because we were bringing in tons of items from China. So caps, and because of this business I was in. So we were dealing in China back when nobody was there. And then a couple of years afterwards, like just around this period of time, my dad called and said, hey, would you like to start a business with me and your brother? It's going to start with women's EVA foam and this cosmetic foam, private labeled, by the way, to all these large companies like Target, Walmart. There was a bunch of them. And then our own brand. So what ended up happening is we were heavily involved with manufacturing of art supplies, crafts, EVA foam. It was going so well that we decided to go over to Taiwan. We opened up a factory over there, and we were able to reduce the cost by about 70%. And these companies, and all of a sudden, all these art supply companies and these other companies were coming to us wanting to see if we could private label for them. So this is pretty cool. This is a really cool story. There was a company out there, I'm not going to say the name, but they do wood-handled stamps. And that's the ones that kids put into ink.
Yeah, what is, okay, so you're talking about if they want to stamp their name or stamp a small picture on a paper, it's a small thing, they dip it into the ink pad and they stamp it on the thing.
Exactly. Okay. So, and there was all types of shapes and, you know, elephants, whatever it would be, right?
Sure.
And so it started out that in between there, so you've got the rubber, the vulcanized rubber, you've got the handle, which is usually maple, and you've got this very thin, thin piece of EVA. Well, that's what they were buying from us. EVA is just a foam. It's cushion it when you put it in the ink and when you press it on the paper. And I think it was my brother that went to the company and said, well, if we're saving you this much money on the EVA, why don't you let us source the wood? And in Taiwan, there was no maples. So we had to find a wood that's very similar. And while we're at it, why don't we just do the vulcanized rubber piece? So we were actually making the full wooden stamp. A few months went by and the company finally agreed. We saved them a ton of money. And based on that, now based on what we could produce, we became the world's leading provider of wood handle stamps. So my dad's a pretty smart guy. And he said, well, what do they need with this? Of course, they need ink pads. So we bought another company in China that did, it was a plastic extrusion company, but they made wood, they made the ink pads. So overnight, we became the largest manufacturer of ink pads in the world. But with that, we were making, the company also made a lot of the containers for the cosmetic industry. So we made for Chanel, we made it for Yves Saint Laurent. I mean, you name it, we were probably making the cosmetic containers. And then it just spread to a ton of other products, like crafts. Stenciling was really big for walls at the time. Sure. So we did that and just a ton of different products, which led to my packaging knowledge. We had to become a specialty packaging company. And we bought a specialty packaging. No, we bought the machines for that. And then we also spread out and we started to do other things like, what were they called? They were just like Visa card cleaners. Sure. You know, those alcohol, they were a card that was soaked in alcohol, and you would just clean anything that you'd have to insert your card into. So we got, this is in your neck of the wood, we got the contract for the New York subway, major hotel chains, even the main slot machine company that provides slot machines to casinos worldwide, which are out of Japan. So we cleaned all those machines before what they do now with these cleaners. And we had three slot machines in the back of the factory that we would play around with just to make sure that it was, you know, take it okay. But there was three machines we could play around with.
So tell me about the timeline for this stuff. So how long were you selling stamps before you decided to buy the mat company, you know, the pad company? How, like, as you're going on this purchasing spree and as you're going on this expansion route, how long would you take to get used to owning a company before you decide you're ready for the next one?
I think it was less than a year.
So that's pretty quick.
It was less than a year. Yeah, it was fairly quick because it just made sense. Now, I got to back that up. That didn't happen until we got the contract with that one company to do the wood handle stamps. And now we're doing like 5 million of these a month. And that allowed us to, we're missing out on something here. The pad. People buy the pad with the stamps.
Right. Interesting. So how did you first hear about Amazon, and when did you decide that that's going to be a place to do business?
I got involved with a lot of online things, like into drop shipping way back in the day. And believe it or not, Jason Katzenbeck had a product called Archon Central, I think. And he had something called PR Kaboom, so press releases. And as you know, I love press releases, but I subscribed to that. I subscribed to Archon Kaboom, or Archon Central, I think it was called. And then my buddy, who was also, went to University of Waterloo, computer science, was the main purchasing manager's kid. And I grew up with him. And I said, why? Like, grew up with him through his mom at this company. And so we became really good friends. So one day he said, hey, you want to go to, like, you know, do something with Amazon? It's like what? And he goes, well, they've got these Kindle courses coming out. It's called AMM. And we listened, we got the course. We were beta to ASM. And I thought, this sucks. I had no interest in this. And nor did he. And then I think it's ASM 3. He says, look, I got a free ticket. You want to, you know, you want to come to Vegas with me? I said, yeah, of course. So we went to Vegas. I bought ASM, that ASM course, and we started together. We started a company together, and it was funny because we had not a real conflict, but he wanted to sell something. I wanted to sell something else. My product was outperforming him like crazy for the first few months. And then his product ended up killing mine. And he did such a great job that I went back to him. I remember going over to him at a restaurant. Like, we always went for lunch once a month. And I was saying, you son of a bitch. Like, I should have stayed with you. I should have stayed with your product. And I got the losing product. But it was still okay. But he was selling six figures way before I was.
Wow. That's amazing. So I guess that fits very squarely into the mistake category, I guess.
Oh, yeah, that was a mistake.
Oh, boy. Are there any other mistakes you could share? I sort of would like to hear about two mistakes. Okay. One mistake that you turned around and turned into a successful situation, and one that you were not able to turn around, and it's just something to learn from forever.
Okay, the one is an Amazon mistake, very, very simple. When I was going through the course, what I didn't realize was how much Amazon was going to take from, I didn't research it enough, and that was on me, but how much they were going to take. And I looked at a smaller, under $10 product, which sold a ton of. And the problem was, it's $10, or no, we sold it for $9.99. And because of that, it became deemed an add-on product. So somebody had to buy $24 worth of product before they could add it to their cart. So if I put this up to $11, it was out of the price range. Nobody would buy it. So that was the first mistake. And how did I change that? Well, oh, by the way, so it cost me $1.40. I was selling it for $10. And that's everything in. So I thought, wow, I got a lot of margin here, a lot of profit. And then I didn't realize it would be $4.65 that Amazon would take before I did it. So again, just not doing my research properly. And how I changed that. So I bundled. Instead of a one pack, it was a three pack or a five pack. And that brought the price over what I needed. And then even to get the price that I needed to build the brand. So my first time, 2017, speaking on stage, I was saying to people that were selling on Amazon that were just selling products, you got to create a brand and build that brand community. That's why Nike left. And I was like pushing that, and I still push that today. But that's what we did. We had to build that brand to have a higher perceived value, to sell at a higher price. So people would, if I had a one bar, that I could sell it for $14.99 and people wouldn't groan. So it had to be the best. Wow. And then the other mistake I made, horrible mistake. This is on I was part of a manufacturing company, part owner, and it was in clothing. This is before I went on with that guy, Dave Reeves, but this is prior to that. But there was a company that was manufacturing clothing when you could do that in Canada. Not can't do that really anymore. And it had embroidery machines with them as well. And I thought this was a really great company. I started selling with them as a salesman, And within a month, I was doing tons of sales, and they asked me to join their team as one of the owners. So, okay, no problem. They showed me the books. Everything was profitable. What did they want from me? It was a $25,000 investment, but looking at it, it looked great. So I went over to the bank with them. We got a $400,000 operating line. And the goal was, the books that I saw was, if I put in the $25,000, we'd be operating flat. There would be no debt. And I thought, wow, this is what an opportunity. And this company was taking off, and I liked the partners I was dealing with. So
I hear where this is going.
I'm on a drive. And also the guy, Dave Reeves, this is how I met the guy. He was another guy who was supposed to put in $25,000. So I'm listening to this guy driving back. One of the partners is calling the guy I'm in the car with, and they're talking like they're on speakerphone. And he's saying that they're overdrawn on the $400,000, that they need another cash injection. And, you know, how are they going to do it? Are they going to go under? It's like, what's going on? How can this be? It turns out that these guys had two books. And so I saw the one, they saw the other. The two guys had put all their ass, they had protected themselves. Okay. And I was 28 years old, and I got stuck $400,000 line of credit. $400,000, and it all came back to me 100%. Then the day that Hayden, I think you know Hayden, sure. He was born, the day that we took him out of the hospital, I had to go to the lawyer's office, and I went there before I went home with Hayden to the lawyer's office to declare bankruptcy.
Oof.
It was crazy.
Yeah, I can't imagine like the emotional roller coaster, which is like the ups and downs.
Yeah, and it does take a lot of time. You know, it takes years to kind of get over that. But what good came out of it was my friend, when this happened, I called him. I didn't really know him at all that time. I just said, hey, Dave, this is going down. Don't give the $25,000. He didn't believe me. Because right. These guys were such nice guys. He didn't believe me. And I said, you can't do it, Dave. You can't do it. It's all on me right now. And he didn't put it in. And what ended up happening is we worked together for about 10 years, just having a great time building this company, this other company.
Wow. So if you would be giving advice to your own kids or to somebody listening to Lunch with Norm today, how should they protect themselves when going into business with a partner? I mean, you looked at the books, you said they're nice guys, you sort of seem to do all the things. What other thing could you have done to maybe catch that or protect yourself? Or what could somebody else do if they're talking to people that they like and that show them nice books that they're looking to go into business with?
Well, I probably look for red flags. If somebody's going to allow you to come into a multi-million dollar company for $25,000 after a month of being a sales guy, I just call that was naive, you know, $25,000. And now you're a third of a partner. So I would have somebody audit the books. And if it stinks, if something's not smelling right, that would be my first red flag. I'd have a lawyer take a look at the agreement carefully and make sure that you're protected as well. So those are a couple of things that you would do. The other thing, and I hate saying it, but I've done it ever since, is I don't have anything in my name anymore. Nothing. You never know when something's going to happen. And, you know, I have had, so, you know, throughout life, you have good and you have bad. And sure. So one of the companies, when I was working with that really large company, we had a great relationship. We had a huge contract with them, multi-million dollar contract. And I'm not going to say the company, but you probably know who I'm talking about, when the CEO got caught in a, not in a scam, but just not reporting properly, and their stock value, which I had a ton of, went from 110 down to about $10 literally overnight. Oof. And they closed everything. And all of a sudden, what I had, and this is a big learning lesson, although I had a bunch of Fortune 500 companies, those are really the only companies we were dealing with, working with us, they didn't make up anywhere near the amount of money that this one company did. So we were a one-legged stool. So that's something I'll never do again, is be a one-legged stool, depending on one company, with, you know, even 10 in the back. It just didn't make it up. So we had to close. So what, instead of going bankrupt, what I did is I called about 100-ish suppliers. You have a ton in the incentive business. Told them what was going on. Some were pissed off. There was another guy I owed $18,000 to. Told him he wasn't going to get it. Just give me, and the spiel was, give me a month or two. I'll see what I can do, and then we'll take it from there. But I, my plan is to pay everybody. And so slowly, I was able to get some really good contracts under my belt again, and I was able to pay everybody. But interesting enough, the one company, it was a bag company, that I told them at first I couldn't pay, I ended up paying them probably 3 or 4 or 5 months later. And then a Fortune 500 company asked me, their human resource company asked me, if I could create these bags for their new employees. And there was 10 or 15,000 of these bags. And I went back to that company, and they even gave me credit.
Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah. I've been in similar situations, and the commitment to repay and actually following through pays almost more dividends than a standard clean payment history. Knowing that you can handle adversity is more important almost than somebody that you're working with that's just smooth sailing forever, because you don't know what's going to happen when there is a challenge. Right. So that's fantastic.
Yeah. So that is, and that is another piece of advice. So I had a grandfather. Oh, that's another one of my first businesses. I had a grandfather clock company, and I don't know how to pound a nail, but I got people that knew how to put them together, the carvers. And where was I going with this?
Wait, Kels, I think we went past the top of the hour. Do we have a word that our sponsors want to say?
Oh, we do. That's a great idea, Norm. All right. Norm, do you want to do the ad read?
Sure. If I can find the ad read. Kelsey, where did you put the ad read?
That's a good question. Okay. Well, how about you two talk for a second, and I will prep that.
Get that ad read?
Perfect. So tell me about the grandfather clause and the grandfather clocks.
Okay. So the grandfather clocks, I bought it off my father back in the day. He was one of his other companies was office furniture and clocks. And with that, I built grandfather clocks for Bulova and a couple of other huge companies. But if you bought a grandfather clock from Bulova, it was my guys that put it together.
Wow.
And then,
right. So it would be sort of like Bulova makes just small clocks and small faces, and you're making the big cabinet ones that the clock goes into.
Right. And we were actually assembling the clock itself, putting it together.
So even the hands and the gears and all that stuff was you.
That's what I used to do.
Yeah. Oh, that's amazing. I originally thought that they're sending you clocks and you put it into the cabinetry that you put together. So you're putting together the actual clocks also.
We're buying the movement, the hammers, the chimes, everything. And in fact, even tuning each one of those chimes.
That's amazing. I love that.
And that's part of, like, I couldn't hammer anything, but I could tune those clocks.
Wow. So that ear goes all the way back to the rock promotion days when you know how to listen to a good band, I guess.
Yeah, something like that. Or it was just I sent out a lot of flat sounding chimes.
One way or another, you got to use that ear.
Yeah.
So wait, is this a story about a disaster, or is this a story that has a lesson to it? Because there was a lesson that was going to come out.
And I forget what it is, but the lesson here, by the way, is that during that time period, I think I was 21 or 22, in around there, the government, this is when Brian Mulroney and who was it? Who was the president during NAFTA? Anyways, NAFTA came in, completely wiped out the grandfather clock business. It was overnight. So I had all this stuff. Our craftsmen were there. And all of a sudden, there was nothing. There's a company in the States called Herman Miller. And in one shift, they could
I'm sitting in a Herman Miller chair, as it turns out. Are you? Yeah, I'm a big fan of the Aerons.
Well, one of the one shift, they could make more clocks than I could in a year.
Right.
And so they came up here, and our clocks were a little different. They were solid wood. Theirs had a veneer with a particle board, but people didn't realize, you know, the clocks. And they have a whole suite of clocks. They have solids as well. Sure. But that wiped me out. And one of the things, though, I got to tell you, one of the funny things that happened, this is going to actually go into the newsletter, is that we got a call from the RCMP to see if somebody was, this guy, Willie Fisher, was working for us. Yes, he was. And so they said, okay, we're going to be over in a second. They wanted to grab him. This guy was in his 70s probably, and he was a carver. And so the cops came, and somehow Willie wasn't there. So Willie was gone. And then we didn't hear from him for about 6 months. And I guess they found him and they charged him. And here this guy was. Do you remember, or in history, right? Back in Germany, when the inflation went through the roof, where there's pictures of people carrying a wheelbarrow to buy some groceries with money.
Oh, yeah. That happens in South America, too, occasionally at some points.
Well, this is what this guy did. That was his job. He was part of Intrepid, and he's a counterfeiter, and he would counterfeit the Deutschmark, and he just put so much paper money into the system where inflation ran crazy. But the problem was, when he came back, it turned out that he wanted to see if he could do that with Canadian government, and he was collecting all these social security checks and forging them and never cashing them. He just wanted to see if he could get away with it. And so they caught up to him, and then he came back, and then they caught up to him again because he didn't stop. But just some really interesting people that we've worked with.
Yeah, there's sort of a thrill that you get from getting away with a thing, even if you're not going to like take it to its full extent. Just the need to poke is something you can't get away from, it feels like.
Right.
Yeah. Oh, welcome back, Kels.
Hello. We are good to go for the ad read.
All right. Now I can read it, I think. Hey, Amazon sellers, ever faced account suspensions, ASIN hiccups, or IP headaches? Introducing Seller Basics, your Amazon account's guardian, which is $99 a month, or with code NORM, $89 a month. Seller Basics offers a dedicated team to shield your business from these challenges. Plus, this membership offers free legal consultations from seasoned e-commerce attorneys. There's no long-term contracts, and you can cancel at with just a month's notice. View Seller Basics as your account's health plan, and you can also get a hold of them at sellerbasics.com. Now for the disclaimers. Seller Basics isn't an insurer or law firm. Consultations come from independent firms, results can vary, and membership is needed before the events leading to claims. Also, terms apply. Now let's get back to Norm.
Hey, thanks for having me back. All right, so this has been amazing, but it is also 12:53, so I think we have time constraints we're working with, right? We do. I almost feel that this could be like a three-parter. Every time you tell a story, I have like four questions about it, and it connects to four more stories. I don't think we even scratched the surface.
Yeah, I can't believe it's already 12:53. So we'll go to the top of the hour, and then we'll call it a day.
Amazing. All right. So we have covered a lot. I'm not actually sure we even got up to 2024, but we definitely have covered a lot into at least the century, I think. If you would summarize the whole picture of Norm, is there like a sort of neat way or a neat thing that you'd want to tell everybody about what you are based on what you've experienced till now?
I don't gamble, but I am a risk taker. And if there's an opportunity that I think could fly, I'm all over it. Even if I don't know what I'm talking about, I'll research it. And then I'll definitely jump in with 2 feet. And that's the other thing. When I do get into something, it's always with 2 feet. It's not with, you know, a toe.
So you're committed, basically.
I do.
That is a lesson of its own. I mean, I can tell you, as a fellow bearded person, we've both been around and we both heard lots of ideas. And there's a time when a thing might sound all right, but you're also unsure. So you might want to dip your toe into it. And the problem is, without the full commitment, that thing might not go anywhere. With the commitment, it has its best chance. So make those decisions, but when you make that decision, commit.
Right. Absolutely. All right, by awesome. The way, the issue that I was going to talk to you about before the question was about in the past where some advice, I forget what it was, but stress is something I would tell people, don't worry about. It has to be something pretty powerful to make me not sleep at night. So it could be the clocks, when that clock business was going under, literally had ulcers. Then moving forward, other things happen, and I can't sleep, waking at night, just couldn't sleep, insomnia. Right. And I spent a lot of my life doing that, because things would come up, or you're expanding, or you couldn't pay, so you're trying to figure out ways that you could. And I had just a very smart person tell me one day, just don't sweat it. It's never as bad as your mind thinks it's going to be. There's never one instance that you're going to show. Like, just go back in your life. Was there anything as bad that happened as bad as what you thought? And the answer for me was no. And so he just summed it up. Look, regardless of the stress, the sun's always going to rise in the east and is always going to set in the west. And I've listened to that. And now, like, stuff that I was sick, like really, I would say sick, I would just brush it off a shoulder now. You know, there's another day.
Yeah, it's interesting. I definitely understand that. And I definitely try to live my life that way. And it continues to be a challenge. I almost think that someone has to experience the suffering before they can get to the point of perspective. So if I tell this to a 21-year-old kid, they will not feel it the same way I do when I give that advice.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a good point, Abe. Or Norm.
All right. You almost let the cat out of the bag.
I almost did.
Almost. Okay, so I think we have two things left. Number one is, if someone wants to get in touch with you, what's the best way to do that?
Well, they could probably listen to me on the podcast, or sign up for the newsletter, or the WhatsApp group. Or if you just want to hit me up on social media, I'm there. And my email is just norm@amz, like Amazon, amz.club.
Wow, that's amazing. All right. Well, I appreciate you coming on today. I appreciate you telling a lot about the person behind the beard. I learned a lot from what I see on these comments flowing through, it definitely seems like everybody would echo my appreciation of your time. Are we doing a wheel of something today?
I don't think we announced it, so I don't think there'd be any.
So we have a special giveaway for everyone today. It's a lifetime subscription of the podcast. So it's something special. Everyone's going to be the winner of that. So congratulations. Hold it.
Why don't we throw in the newsletter at the same time?
Oh, you're going crazy today.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. You can also sign up for the newsletter free of charge. I don't know how long this is going to last. So sign up for that quickly. But, awesome. I think that's it.
All right. All right, guys. Thank you all for joining us today. When's our next podcast, Norm the guest?
The next podcast is on Wednesday, AI Wednesday, and then Friday.
All right. Well, you have two this week to look forward to. I think we've gotten the month off to an amazing start.
Want more great information? Don't forget to subscribe by clicking here. Also, if you want to check out our latest podcast, click over here. 100, 100, 100.